Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 30. TNG season 6, episode 21. Frame of mind.
You're becoming agitated.
You bet I'm agitated! I may be surrounded by insanity, but I am not insane. And nothing you or anyone else can say will change that. And I won't let you or anyone else tell me that I am. You may be able to destroy my mind, but you can't change the fact that I'm innocent. I didn't kill that man! And that's what's driving you crazy.
I can see we have a lot of work to do.
Nothing you can say will change the fact I'm innocent! I'm not crazy! I'm not crazy! I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy. No! They're all gonna laugh at you! No! I'm not crazy! You're crazy! No!
Are you just reading your notes?
Where's my Nisra? I'm gonna cut you with my Nisra! No!
All right, Dan, I think you have to, you're clearly heavily invested in this. And so for the audience out there, it took us a while to start the recording because Dan was just staring silently at his notes. And then he said, this was it was a very confusing episode to take notes, or very confusing to take notes for this episode.
It was confusing because I would have these sort of, like, I was trying to break it down into what was real and what wasn't real. And then halfway through, I'd have this realization. It's like, oh, that's right. It's all just... Okay, then I don't want to get started on a bad negative foot. Is that... that's not a thing, is it? Get started on a negative foot?
A bad foot, yeah.
I don't want to get off the wrong foot.
There's definitely a wrong foot, yeah.
Boy, I don't know how to speak. I forgot how to say a cliche. Was that? It's not a cliche.
It's not a cliche.
It's not a cliche.
It's like an aphorism.
Apparently don't know how to speak. I call it an aphorism cliché.
It's a tired aphorism.
Anyways, evidently, which is how...
evidently. Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say that.
Optimism.
Evidently.
Optimism.
Not necessarily. I like this episode. I thought this was a good episode. I enjoyed it. I thought...
Yeah, I really like this one, too.
What is
you're looking at me for affirmation? No, I agree.
I'm just looking.
To now let he's you... looking at me.
No, I'm looking. I'm not looking for affirmation. I'm looking because we're having a conversation, and it's sort of signaling that, like, yeah, we're having a discussion now.
I know, right?
We're having a discussion
of a sort.
They call it a podcast.
See, this
now
is...
he's pointing his thumb at me
because
he's
doing
at Jesse and pointing.
He's doing
his thumb
that. He's doing that thing where he's just like here. He's just like Dan's saying something really silly right now. Dan's saying something really silly.
I'm just being cheeky.
Yeah, then he's doing that thing where he responds like, no, it's fine, Dan. No, I'm not.
He's just being cheeky.
Just being cheeky
he's
and
totally,
charming.
He's totally tickled with the fact that he's cheeky.
So you were saying...
I could say 1 + 1 = 2, and you could be like, ho, 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 ho.
Why don't you give it a try?
I refuse. I'm not falling to your traps.
All right. So.
All right.
All right. You like this episode. I like this episode. Did you like this episode, Jesse?
I did. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great late, you know, TNG, late era TNG, end of season 6.
I was thinking one of the things I was comparing it to last week when we did Cause and Effect. And the thing that separates this from Cause and Effect is that this, like Cause and Effect, doesn't really have any commentary on like any social issues or anything.
Yeah, not much.
Right. And so that's what
just a big old mind bend.
Right, but when I was trying to figure out what Cause and Effect was missing, I was like, it didn't have any social commentary, but at the same time, it doesn't need social commentary. So what this did have that Cause and Effect didn't have is it did have sort of like, it was relatable. It was relatable in the sense that it talked about the mind and things like that. cause and effect yeah. didn't, there was nothing really relatable about cause and effect. It was just some things that happened, well, which didn't make it bad. It was good. It's just, this is more like, whoa, what if my brain did that? You know, and you get to be all like,
I would take it even a step further and say that, you know, cause and effect, it not only didn't have any social commentary, but not even really any personal commentary. And this one treads very closely to that too, because there are moments where you think that the message is going to be something about Riker trusting his, you know, his old friends or something, you know, trusting those people that he somehow inherently recognizes that he trusts them, but he actually kind of goes the opposite direction. Yeah. I mean, like cause and effect, what we discussed, which we discussed last week, there's not a lot there. The other difference though, is that whereas cause and effect was a temporal anomaly, this, at least there was some in kind of that political discussion with, like, what was it? The factions. How did Picard say it?
He said the various factions,
the various factions. Yeah. Hey, hey, don't you love those various factions?
A brilliant Patrick Stewart impression.
It seems that there are various factions vying for power.
That was also, I mean, it goes to your relatable point, because you can think about, you're like, okay, there's a story. There's a story happening on this planet. We're seeing a sliver of it. We're seeing one faction trying to get an advantage by getting some information out of, you know, Riker's head, I guess, is ultimately what it was. But what another thing that this has that cause and effect didn't have as much, cause and effect was great because you could jump in. You don't need to know anything about Star Trek. As we said last week, it's a great entry point and it's a great sci-fi tale. And it's an interesting, fun little mystery to go through. And it's very well performed and directed and all that. This does at least offer a showcase, not only of Jonathan Frakes's acting ability, but as you noted, it's talking about your brain. And one of the scariest things for probably anybody is like, what happens if you can't trust your own fucking brain?
Yeah. It's like, when he wasn't joking to Lee in, original in TOS.
Yeah. I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah. It was like that, where that wasn't necessarily commenting on anything going on, you know, I mean, I don't know, whatever you want to go into that, the humanity commentary on humanity, but it was more like what happens to your mind when certain things happen.
Yeah.
So,
right, yeah.
And how would you react? How would a beloved character react?
As it went into a different direction though, because there was that whole scene where Troy, who was sort of the represented his sort of fear and sort of, she was there. Well, she didn't represent his fear. It was his emotions. It was during the reflection therapy. Which was, it was emotions. Troy was there to comfort his fear, basically. And then Worf appeared to sort of express his anger. And then Picard was there to sort of implement the logic.
Yeah, like the reason.
Yeah, and so...
Like the bigger picture.
So there was that whole scene, and when they were saying, you know, Troy was like, you know, you can trust us, Will. But and then, then they went the opposite direction because they had that final trick thing, you know, like
He blasted Mavic.
When he blasted...
What happened to Mavec?
When he blasted himself. Oh, did he blast Mavec first, then himself? Yeah, that's right. But the final trick thing, like they do when the monster comes back, it turns out he couldn't trust them. But it's like, how do you trust something that's not real? But it all ended up that it was really another fancy way of saying it was a dream, kind of.
Yeah.
Is what it was, essentially. Because it wasn't... They did say there was some kind of neurosomatic technique. They made it a point of being very vague about that.
Well, the cool thing is though there are similarities to the kind of cliched you wake up and it was all a dream thing, the main difference is, of course, that factored into the actual telling of the story. So it wasn't that he had some experience and then it turns out he didn't have that experience. Yeah, on the surface level, that's true. But it's going, that whole push and pull and the tug back and forth between reality, or it's never reality, really. You know, it's like all these different hallucinations and playing with the, you know, perception, you know, monkeying around with somebody's perception. I think they handled it really well, because if you had taken a few different tacts, I think maybe it wouldn't have worked so well. I think it was nicely directed, the way it was written. I like that they drop you in right at the beginning in the teaser. They're already putting you, sort of making you confused, because you're like, why is Riker being all intense and weird?
Yeah.
Right from the get-go. And that sort of establishes, it's almost like that's the reality. So when you're going into the back, flipping back and forth in reality, part of the thing that keeps you off kilter is you started in this reality, in a sense, even though it's the play and it's the rehearsal, well, it's still coming off, you know, from that perspective.
But is, so when does the actual, because I was thinking, I was wondering this, and I was thinking the actual sort of dream sequence, whatever you want to call it, it, you could have said, you could say it started from the beginning, very first scene of the episode, the very first scene of it.
That's
because,
a fair point, yeah.
Because first of all,
yeah. I mean, you can only assume that that's still part of his illusion.
Yeah, right. It starts from that, because when he got stabbed in the head pretty early, right? That was when, okay, first of all, some evidence, not evidence, but some suggestive things that might say that some of the TNG stuff wasn't real. Like Worf was acting really funny.
He was really grumpy.
He was super grumpy. And
then
he
was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, yeah. I cut you in the head.
You'd think he was grumpy for some kind of reason that he was, it, like you thought later in the episode, he'd be like, I was really mad at you because you dated Troy that one time. but then it wasn't that at all. He's just grumpy. And then the fact that Worf stabbed him, when would Worf accidentally stab someone in the head? Unless he was pissed off at him for some reason, for something else.
Yeah.
Even then he's too much of a warrior to do something like that.
Now I want to go back and look and see if I can parse it out. I guess having seen this episode a number of times, I guess I always sort of assume that at the beginning we are prior to Riker going down to the planet, you know, because there's, you know, he's talking about his preparations or whatever, and they're having discussions about it. And I just sort of naturally assumed that that was the case. But, you know, honestly, with the way the story unfolded, there's nothing preventing that also from being in his mind to begin with, because all of his hallucinations are talking about the factions and the planet. And, you know,
it's the stuff that recently happened to him. So that's what's like swirling around in his head.
Yeah. From the very first moment he cut his head, well, you could say that really happened too. Although that was the thing, that was like that Inception thing. Is there a name for that when you go into when you have a story where the person's stuck in a fake reality, the thing that's supposed to tell them that they're still in the fake reality, otherwise they'll think they're in fake reality forever? Because you know when
you're totem, wasn't it called a totem?
Was it called a totem? Okay,
I think it was called a totem.
His was the cut on the head. As long as he had that cut on his head, he knew he wasn't in the real world, because he was as long as he was still bleeding from that head, his head still hurt, and his head was hurting after he got healed. That's what indicated to me is that even after Crusher healed the injury on his head, it was still hurting. Mm-hmm. Why would it still be hurting unless he was in the dream? When I originally saw it, I assumed the beginning was real, but then I couldn't ever pinpoint. You can't pinpoint the part where it switches over, which could be anything. But also, combined with some of that stuff near the beginning, yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like the whole thing. Like we don't even know, you know. Maybe the plot of that play was something totally different. Probably not. That's probably going a little too far.
And I, if I understood correctly, it was a play that Dr. Crusher had written herself. I believe they kept referring it to it as Beverly's play,
right?
And I think if it was a
different
play,
into it.
But she's into dancing. She's into the theater. So yeah, seems like she would.
So she would do a psychotherapy play.
Nah. Interestingly, about doctors that are trying to fuck with people.
Maybe.
But not, you know, just like psychologists or something, or psychiatric doctors. Not like, you know, she's not a psychiatric doctor.
No, but it's still about doctors.
She's a proper
doctor. It's still about a proper doctor.
I'm not insane. I thought Jonathan Frakes was excellent in his role as a insane person trying to be like, I'm not insane. I mean, a sane person being insane. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, do you think when he does roles, when actors do this roles, and you know, when he did this role, was he like, I'm just going to pretend I'm in the play? Or do you think he's like, I'm going to be William Riker, who's pretending to be in this play? Or do you think he just skips straight to the, you know, cuts out the Riker middleman at that point and just tries to act in a play?
The Riker middleman.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah, like, I don't know, because I'm you know, I really don't know how actors do their things. So,
like, how do actors act like someone who's acting something else?
Exactly.
You know?
I bet you it's hard.
Yeah, I bet.
And it probably depends on your style of acting, because, you know, some people like the method style, which everyone makes fun of, but some people are into. Other people are just like, no, I'm, you know, I read the lines, you know, like Anthony Hopkins or somebody who's just like, they pay me money and they give me a strict script and I say the words and then they give me even more money.
Yeah. There was some line about, you know, the secret to acting is to act your part or something. I don't know. It was some kind of knock. I think it was something along the lines of what you were saying.
Where I think Frakes had an advantage here is, at least, I don't know, from listening to actors and stuff on in interviews and things, I get the impression that acting like you're a bad actor or singing like you're a bad singer are really hard to do for people who are actually proficient at those things. But Frakes in this episode, he was acting as a good actor. Mm-hmm. So that's probably easier to be like, I am an actor and I'm going to portray a character who is also a pretty good actor. To me, I don't know. It just seems like the thought process there is probably easier than trying to have to be like, I'm a good actor and I'm going to pretend I'm a goofy bad actor. Oh, yeah. Oopsie loopsies.
Right. Yeah. Because like, you know, when I watch someone acting and they're all, and I can't even think of an example of this, but if somebody was like getting way into their part, like he was and all these, like, I'm not crazy. Ah! It's like, I don't know. Like when it's considered overacting or not, I don't know the difference. It was fascinating. I thought he played the part well, but like, what do I know? You know,
well, so, and theater acting is different than film acting, and so this is like acting within film.
That's the other part.
And it's funny that they have like this whole theater set up on the ship, and it's not just like a holodeck. Like they're all talking about like the stage crew, and it's like they have a stage. What, they've got a stage crew?
I think it was just intent forward, but like, they brought in some bleachers. You know, or something.
Right. They can just like, you know, replicate a bunch of equipment.
It looked like the room in middle school where they would do.
Yeah, it looked like the little theater. Yeah.
Oh, that's like Glasgow. I've been to the Glasgow theater. It kind of looked like that Glasgow theater.
A little bit,
where I saw someone do Our Town or something. I don't know that. Remember that play Our Town?
I do remember
it was
that.
Featured, play, it was Our featured Town, an episode of Wonder Years as well.
Yeah, like okay, like the room that with like the big like terrace.
Yeah, the big steps. Yeah.
That's what this looked like. Like they just had terrace steps, and then Picard sitting all in the middle of the audience. The audience was weirdly far away.
Future theater.
I mean, all of that, of course, was, you know, it was designed to be a creepy, weird episode, and it wasn't like creepy in the mega creepy style, but it was disturbing. I would say it was more on the level of being just sort of like unnerving.
Because the funny forehead alien kept popping up.
Yeah.
And it was always like, what?
When Riker was actually, because, you know, and from the play, you see that him looking through the window saying, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
Like from the play, the audience perspective, you know? Yeah. And it's funny because I was trying to, also, not knowing much about this, so I was trying to think about the blocking. And during the play, you could see, like, that's what it's called, right? Like, how you're faced and stuff.
Yeah, where you put the camera, where you put the people.
Yeah, and so when they're doing from the play, he was talking to a window behind him, but he didn't have his back to the audience fully. He kind of had his back, but he also had his head kind of turned to the side, so it's like you could tell he was speaking the opposite direction, but he was still facing the audience just a little bit. He still had his face kind of near the audience. But then one of the creepier parts is when he does that again, except quote unquote for real, you know?
Yeah.
And this time it's from the perspective of the actual window.
Right, right.
And so you can tell in that he's fully faced. So like if that was from the perspective of the window when he was doing the play, he would have been side faced, but this he was like full faced, so they were doing the blocking a little different, and that was pretty creepy because he was just like and then they did that zoom away thing and it was all fucked up, and it was that was kind of upsetting actually.
I like it when like he's doing the play and he's just faded into that reality or whatever, and like so he's all awkwardly on the stage and he's like looking in the audience, and then like,
yeah,
and Captain Picard's all like looking back all intensely, all like, yes, I'm watching this play. When are you gonna start acting?
I wonder if Patrick
Stewart,
waiting
for you to start acting.
Patrick Stewart, obviously he must go to plays, but I'm wondering if you're a famous stage actor and you spend so much time up on the stage, is it like a chore to go to see a play, unless it's like really like good buddies or like really good play? I know it's, you know, it's
and
a
then
bit
if
meta.
Somebody recognizes you and you're like, oh shit, like I threw off the whole play because I'm in the audience.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
They're gonna see me and everybody's gonna be like thrown off. Patrick Stewart's in the fucking audience.
When I watch, I like watching, you know, concerts and shows, you know, with music and things like that. And I have played in that situation before. I've been the one on stage, on giant stages in front of millions of people. Just look it up. But
yeah, man.
But on the other hand, if I'm watching a TV show that has to do with the subject matter of the place I work at, it could be a great show, but I kind of don't want to watch it.
Yeah. Right. You know? Right. I was at work all day.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't really want to deal with that.
Yeah, and it's kind of a bummer. It's like, because it's like, I really want to watch this show.
It's
but
like
I just
you don't watch Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah, I really want to watch. I really, I know I would like that show. It's just I just always don't really feel like watching it because I'm just like, oh man, I gotta, you know, yeah, think about this stuff some more. And it also will bring out some like insecurities in me and things like that. I'm just like, oh no.
You're like, oh, why aren't I not a billionaire yet?
Yeah, right. You mean you can, you mean you're
such
can
a fucking loser, I don't have $1 billion.
You can sell your code like that?
Yeah, just slinging Dan's here, slinging code left and right.
The one thing that popped out at me was that when you watch this show again and you keep reminding yourself that the vast majority of this is in Riker's head, that Mavek, right? It was his name. That doctor's assistant was so creepy.
Administrator. He was the, or wait, wait,
no, Mavek. Mavek was the big dude.
Oh, he was the tall guy. No, the big guy was like the head security guy, right? That's Mavek.
No, Mavek was the, like, he
was the
he
main.
Was, you know, he was like a guard or orderly or something.
Okay, yeah, is he orderly? Yeah. The big orderly who was like,
he didn't run anything. He was just, the doctor guy seemed to run the show.
He was just mostly taunting Riker. Yeah. Okay, sorry. So you were saying about Mavek.
Yeah, I was just saying that guy was really, the actor was creepy, the way they portrayed him. And I keep having to remind myself that, I mean, there may have never been a Mavek to begin with. I don't know if he was based on somebody or what. We don't get enough information about exactly how this process works. But it does seem that all of that stuff was in Riker's head. What we do see Riker on the table towards the end of the episode with the thing in his head, which was causing him to imagine getting hurt in the head.
Yeah, because he could have just been on that table the whole time.
He was clearly on that table.
And then like he was just like, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah, and so I don't know. It's just it's kind of funny because we meet all these characters and we don't even know if they're based on anybody or if they're complete fabrications. But it makes more sense when you watch it through, you know, a second time and you're like, okay, everyone's acting super fucking weird. And that guy was creepy and weird. But what I thought the episode did well was that all of those things that happen in Riker's head are nevertheless like plausible. Like even though we know the truth, we watch Star Trek, so we know Riker, something's going on with Riker. When they're sitting down and the doctor is like explaining it to him, you can buy, like it makes sense. Like if you were Riker, you could buy into what the doctor was saying.
Right.
Or when Riker's talking to that quote unquote officer, you know, who's like talking to her spoon or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And you can be like, okay, is this real? Is this not? Is she another person? But like, she's in like networked into his brain somehow. Or
yeah, because she's all talking about like all kinds of Starfleet stuff. Like I was on the Yorktown with this guy, and you're like looking at him. It's like, but those aren't like Starfleet people. Those are those funny looking aliens.
Yeah,
it's like what's going on here.
So when they were talking, about the neurosomatic technique, they didn't. It's not clear what that is. And now, as clear as it needs to be, I kept wondering, was it involve them making some kind of like, you know, sort of using psycho adventures to like go inside your brain and
they just jacked off in his brain.
Create a
I mean,
story.
Jacked into his brain.
Yeah, was that's what I'm wondering. Did they
plug it in? Just
like did they
right in the side of the head?
Did they
just like Data?
Did they create weird scenarios for Riker, or was it simply that they were poking his brain with needles and this is Riker responding? You see, one instance is them creating a scenario for Riker and him responding weirdly, or like part of the technique is to sort of trick him. Because, you know, especially with the reflection therapy, it seemed like a moment where that reflection therapy was going to be their way of tricking him into giving information.
Right,
like one of those things in the movies or shows where they're like, we need, this will work, but only if he agrees to do it. So we got to trick him into wanting to do it. We have to trick him into thinking he's
like
crazy.
Like that Rick and Morty episode with those aliens. It's like David Cross.
With the
like
butthole
flaps. Simulation.
Simulation within a simulation.
Yeah.
Within a simulation.
Well, so if the reflection therapy I wasn't just like some things that were happening, if it was instead like, okay, the reflection therapy only works if he volunteers to do it. So we got to make him think he's crazy. So he volunteers to do the reflection therapy. Or was it all just needles in the brain and it was just made up in his head? You know what I'm saying? Because like, I think it was really them just poking needles in his head. I don't think anything that happened in his brain was at all influenced by them. That's what I'm like, the only influence they had on that whole...
They were poking needles and his brain was just going.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The way it would go, it would react.
Like shooting electrical impulses through your brain and there was no kind of like floofty doofty psycho analysis about like, well, I'm a magical mystery butt and I'm going to make you go doo-doo. And like, there was none of that.
There was none of that.
So,
evidently,
it does appear that the setting of the mental institution was from the play,
right?
And his positioning himself as a patient, prisoner was from, you know, being accused of something he wasn't,
right.
Everything worked in to the plot of the play and to Riker's real life in some way.
Right. And so that's why at first when I was talking about this was confusing to take notes on is because I was like taking notes. Maybe he was referring to the play, but that wasn't actually the plot of the play. He was talking about being in a play, but what they were doing to him mentally when they were making up the story for him, like that was them creating it. And he retroactively made that in his brain what the play was. Yeah. And the play was by something else entirely. And then I was like, right. No, that's not what happened. It was very clearly, it seemed like that was the plot of the play. And he fit that into the situation he was going on now, because somehow his brain told him he was in. That was another line that they brought up. Some kind of, that sinister music when they're like, after he told him all this shit, like, Starfleet doesn't remember who you are, no big deal. But then when he's like, you're in a mental institution on Talonis 42 or something like that, or Talonis Mental Institution number 42. Then right. It's like, do-do-do-dong. And it was like,
Ward 42.
It's like, that's what it is, Ward 42. So, why did they play I would think the moment Starfleet didn't recognize him would have been the moment they would have played that music. But that's neither here nor there. The point I'm getting at, though, was basically just like, why Talonis Ward 42? He must have invented that in his brain, I guess. And then, Patrick, like what you said with Mavek, like, why was Mavek there? Did he just totally invent that guy? Or was that guy an implant they put into his brain? But they didn't put implants in his brain, probably. They probably just poked him in the head with needles.
Or, yeah. On the other side of it, the doctor guy, who we do see at the end, clearly was getting information out of Riker's head and sort of communicating with him in some fashion or another. So yeah. Perhaps some part of this process, yeah. He was able to project himself in there, whatever. I don't know. It's not very well explained. It's just for the purpose of the story. I don't really see it as a criticism so much, but it is, it's sort of just is like, okay, here's the dream story and here's Jonathan Frakes acting really well. And it's kind of creepy and disturbing. And then everything's fine at the end.
There's the part where you see in the opening scene where he's having trouble with part of the scene. And then, during the rehearsal and then like later on, he's like he's walking down the corridor and he has all this uncertainty. And like, if that's just part of his hallucinations, it's like, did he really have a problem with the scene in real life? That was just a problem like that his brain was having, like going through the stuff because they were poking at his brain. Like the it's probably the actual play they did like went off like really well and he never had any problem because he's fucking Will Riker. Like,
yeah, that's yeah, right.
He acted the shit out of that shit.
Yeah, at the end I was like, how did the play go? I was kind of wondering. Yeah. But
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Dr. Livingston, I presume. Isn't that something else?
Yeah,
that's something completely different. Yeah, that's totally
a different.
Some guy,
completely different direction.
In this context, that would be a non sequitur.
No, it was you were just making quotes, and so I made a quote.
But our quote had to do with.
No, I know Dr. Livingston had to do with arriving somewhere late or something, and someone was like, "You're famous, well, and I'm just pretending you aren't." And that's kind of like being in a play,
supposedly.
Sort of.
I don't know if that guy actually said that, but like this guy went to look for some guy in Africa and he was the only other white guy. So it was like, obviously that.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot the whole context around it. I just knew it was.
You just decided to say it.
I just knew that the whole point was like, of course it's Dr. Livingston, you idiot. Yeah, and that the person knew that it was, and it was just a joke they were making.
Yeah.
Yes. So, right. So Riker, yeah, of course he acted the shit out of the play. So yeah, why would he be having all these insecurities? And maybe he was just manifesting his own. I mean, with the things with these dream interpretations, you can always say whatever you kind of want to, Like, oh, he was insecure because he was insecure before the play. So he's just dreaming about it and manifesting it as that.
Like,
so,
we don't know. This is all, there's all sorts of things that are vague in this episode. And you don't, it's like you're watching it and you don't really know what's happening. And then like you think back on it and you're like, what was really happening?
We're also, to a certain extent, we're beholden to 1993 popular psychology, pop psychology, which was something that has, been somewhat problematic in for Troy in terms of the as time passes, I really like Troy. I think Troy is a great character, but there are times where it's the advice she's given would probably be not considered that sound by modern psychologists, and probably not by psychologists at the time necessarily either. But these were writers, you know, and they're thinking like, oh, and this, you know, Worf represents this and stuff. And it's like, all right, that's kind of, it's really handy for a theatrical presentation for like a Greek style play with a chorus of people. And but but if that's the advice you're actually giving, you're the commanding officer or the second in command of a major starship, it could potentially be considered problematic.
I feel like you know, psychologists in media, fictional media, have probably improved over the years, I'm guessing.
I think as more people go to psychology.
You know, Dr. Katz.
Dr. Katz was great.
Straight up.
It was all brilliant. Wiggly.
No, you know, I never thought of this before, Dan, but since you made this pop into my brain, is that perhaps it's basically a function of more people going to therapy. The writers have more familiarity what actual therapy looks like.
That's an interesting point.
As opposed to somebody, you know,
or at least more writers are
which
going
is
there.
Good, which is a good thing that more people casually have an understanding of what psychology is about, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's one side of the argument could be like, well, everyone's going crazy now. And the other side is like, no, people are more accepting of the things that have been real all along, you know. So
It's real.
It's a phase.
I'm not crazy.
I don't know why in my notes I just have in capital letters nine times. Oh, yes. Was that Mavic?
He can do
that?
It nine times.
nine times. I think Mavic said that, and it's all disconnected from my head now because I don't know what's real and what's fake.
Oh yeah,
I like it how they had that when when Worf and Data like come and rescue him, and then like Data all like pulls the door open and like, I'll get Data to pull the door open.
Yeah,
and like Worf all like charges in, and then they go to some other room and they have like that like pattern enhancer set up.
Yeah,
and it's like, why did they have that set up in the other room?
Yeah, and that looked like the cafeteria where he was at before.
Yeah, no, and what was funny is one of the things I found funny was when Riker was running and then Data all catches him when he's running away.
Yeah,
it was some kind of slapstick routine.
Like when you grab a kid who's like stealing something from the store.
Yeah, and he's like all flying forward and they're like, nope.
Like,
and then like,
wait a minute, buddy.
he's like falling forward and he's like, nope. And he pulls him back and then he's falling back and he's like, nope, I'm going to catch you this way too. And it's like, it was a really comical scene. I don't think it was supposed to be, but it ended up being that way.
And they were wearing their ninja clothes.
The ninja clothes. Yeah, I noted that too. Yeah.
Starfleet issue ninja clothes.
Data and Worf were super ninja.
When Picard went on that one mission, he wore ninja clothes.
Yeah. But on that ninja mission, Picard was skulking about through caves. In this ninja mission, they were just beaming down to a brightly lit corridor.
So you could figure out which one was
walked
which.
Right in there.
Yeah. So, the whole going on ninja, because Riker was on a ninja mission originally too, and it's the question of, you know, I guess when Picard went on his ninja mission, it was because they were setting him up. But when Riker went on his ninja, I mean, how often are you supposed to send your first in command? Like on, I mean, that's a question. One of those questions. It doesn't matter.
It's still fun to talk about.
But that's like the ultimate question of why are they sending like
why
they're always
the most
sending
capable?
The senior officers down on the away mission. It's like that wouldn't happen in the real Navy.
Yeah, you wouldn't send on like especially some covert operation that was so dangerous that it made Worf grumpy.
Yeah, he's super grumpy.
Yeah, but another thing that made me wonder about the whole the timeline of whatever actually happened was because he was set to do this play and go on some like life and death ninja mission like 2 days after that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. If I was going on a ninja mission, I don't think I could concentrate on being in a play. So it made me think maybe that's not the actual order of how things happen. And he just.
But space travel takes a lot of time. And there's a lot of time where you're just cruising through space for like weeks.
No.
Because at the beginning, they were like, it's going to be 5 days till we get there or something. Wasn't it something like that? I forget exactly.
No, but I'm not questioning.
So they're just doing this play because they got nothing better.
I'm not questioning the timeline, and I see what you're saying where there's like they might as well do something. At the same time, I know, and this is why I'm not a Starfleet officer, probably.
Oh man.
But one of the reasons.
Are you sure?
Is because.
In addition to the non-existence of Starfleet.
Yeah.
Oh man.
The fact that I would know that I'm going on a life or death ninja mission that could very well end in my death, I wouldn't be able to personally concentrate on doing a play.
Well, first of all, you'd probably be like, we'd all be like Lower Decks type people. So that's why that when we're looking forward to that show when that comes out, because that will be fun. One of the key things on that show is it's going to be, you know, when you read the descriptions is they're going to have a lot of people doing important things for the ship, but having no context for it. They just get an order that you're like, do this. And they're like, I have no fucking clue why I'm doing this. But apparently it's important.
From the moment I was told that I'm going to do something like that, though, to the time I do it, I'm not going to be able to concentrate on anything else.
I also, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my recollection was not that this was a life or death mission. It was a potentially dangerous, you know, a hairy situation, but he was just going to go in, skulk about, see if he could find the people and get them out. Like, I don't think this was like a Black Hawk Down type situation, or wasn't expected to be. I think it was more of a like James Bond going in and being like, shit's getting a little shady. So like, and plus combined, the other thing I was going to mention is combined with Riker's sort of confidence / arrogance in general, that he's just like, yeah, I'm cavalier about this.
He's gonna fight in an alleyway somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Well, but then that still doesn't explain why Worf was so grumpy. Because Worf actually said himself like,
this. But was that real Worf or at that point? Or was that imaginary Worf?
Well, see, that was imaginary Worf. So maybe that was part of Riker that was like, I should be more scared of this life or death situation
like,
or something.
Yeah, like, you know? I bet Worf is really pissed at me now because I fucked up.
Well, maybe in his subconscious, he knew this is nonsense talking now, but maybe in his subconscious, because he knew he was on a strap to a table with a needle and is getting neurosomatically techniqued, he was thinking to himself, oh no, if I had only taken this mission more seriously, I wouldn't be in this spot right now. And that manifested in Worf like berating him or something.
Exactly.
So
it's like, if anybody's gonna give me shit, it's fucking Worf. Like,
yeah. So, but I was wondering then if like maybe this whole thing took place after the play had already happened. That was what I was wondering. But I guess, once again, it's like, you know, another thing that was on the, I thought that was weird on the Enterprise was when Deanna was telling him, like, break a leg. He's like, I hope you don't mean that literally. Like, why?
why would he
think she meant it literally? And then he kissed her, which was weird, too.
There's some weird bitterness between those Zimzadis.
Are they Zimzadudis?
I think once you're Imzadi, you're always Imzadi.
Dude, it was weird that they kissed. It was weird that they kissed, which makes me think that was also not a real thing, because in his head, he likes to kiss Troy. But like, they wouldn't do that in uniform. Like, I know it wasn't a romantic kiss. I know it was like a friendly closeness kiss, but it's a little bit, this is a little bit crossing the line, I thought, you know.
The professional ethics in The Next Generation are complicated and bizarre, because they seem to allow romances between people. It doesn't seem to be frowned upon.
Like Geordi's always hooking up with some like junior officers and like under his command.
Yeah, or they're trying to hook up with him without seeming to worry about.
Yeah,
you know.
Like yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, they had that naked mud bath together.
Oh yeah.
I guess though, being different. Naked in the future is no
was
big
with,
deal.
Like, Alexander. And,
yeah. I like it.
Yeah, that's in the future. Being naked is like a normal, no big deal kind of thing.
At least if you're on Ferenginar.
Franginar and
Beta Zonia.
If it's a Beta Z wedding, Franginar, it's like the women don't wear
clothes. Women don't wear clothes. They get all disgusted and then turned on if women are wearing clothes.
Yeah. So I didn't want to see his mom wearing clothes because it's
Moogie.
Like, it's so weird.
Spiny lobefish.
Yeah, spiny lobefish.
It looked pretty good. I don't know.
It didn't look like he was eating.
It didn't look that bad at all. It looked like some kind of rice and stuff.
Well, that looked like some kind of olive grain or something like that. Wasn't there some other separate dish?
What is olive grain?
What is olive
that's
grain?
Like all I could think of what he looked like he was eating.
But can you describe it to us?
it's like some kind of grain.
Couscous?
It's some kind of grain that has an olivey texture and flavor.
Wait, what? Is it slimy and brown or?
No, like dried olives. Like old dried
leathery.
Olives. Yeah, old dried olives. Like you get on a pizza.
you're just ruining my nightmare. Olive grain.
Who eats
the idea of
like
a
that?
Grain that has the texture of old dried olives.
Nobody eats olives like that.
Well, it's like,
where are you getting your food?
Where are you getting your olives?
Well, I mean, that's the only thing I could think it looked like.
Are you sure you're not getting raisins?
Don't you live near the Italian store?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was like, that's what it looked like, is old olive, like the leftover grain from olive.
Olive's not a grain, it's a fruit.
That's what I'm saying.
The spiny lobefish.
That was a different looking dish. Wasn't that like a silver dish or something?
The spiny lobefish to me is a contradiction.
That sounds delicious.
Because it's like weird. You don't think of spines and lobes.
Yeah.
You
think of like lobes being all lobey and bloopy.
Like jellyfish or something.
And you think of spiny things being all like anemones or something. But like
either way, spiny it sounded lobe-ish. Delicious. Yeah. Spiny lobefish.
And it rolls off the tongue.
Try that motherfucker.
Like if you put it in your mouth, it literally rolls off your tongue.
So, because it's all lobey.
Lobes. I kept thinking of Ferengi talking about massaging their lobes.
You don't have the lobes.
What do fish don't have lobes?
Lobefish do.
They don't.
Lobefish.
There's something called a lobefish, I think.
Is there?
I think so. I bet there's blobfish. When I think of a lobefish, I think of a blobfish. You know that ugly, saggy faced fish? Kind of looks like a space whale on Discovery.
Wait, say that name again?
Like a blobfish.
A blobfish.
If you look it up,
A gormagander? Are you talking about a gormagander?
A gormagander looks kind of like a blobfish.
Gormagander.
What's the one that's supposed to be the affordable lobster, but it's not lobster? Monkfish. Monkfish.
Wait.
Langoustine.
Monkfish. What?
Monkfish is pretty ugly, isn't it?
Yeah, monkfish is like tastes like lobster. It's supposed to be like the
yeah, but that's a fish.
I know, but my point I'm making is if you want to eat like a tarantula is a spider, but it tastes like crab. So
right.
Yeah, they're both, but of course they are both. They are both part of the same family.
They're all in the same.
It's a
thing.
Similar, yeah. They're arthropods.
But apparently, when you cook up monkfish, it's supposed to kind of have the texture. And
I did not know that.
It's a big, thick fish.
I'm going to go cook up some monkfish.
Yeah, I can see that.
Lobster.
So, do you think a spiny lobefish has a spine that's all lobey, or is the lobe all spiny?
I don't know. I mean, even looking at the dish, it was difficult to tell because it had spines and definitely had
some kind of like tamarind sauce.
Had some like foldy lobes,
spiny lobefish, or like maybe a mango.
What
space mango? What's,
maybe a green chili.
A space green chili.
Is this a dangerous question to ask? But what species do you think you in Star Trek humanoid species uses tamarind the most, other than human?
I was gonna say
Andorians,
Vietnamese.
Oh man.
I mean, I
think it's more Indian, probably.
Well, Indian too. Tamarind. I've seen tamarind. What? Stuff.
Tamarind's all over.
I was talking about other than humans.
I know, but I just don't. I did not mean to imply it in Vietnamese.
Yeah, that's what I was like. That's, I didn't know
I
what you're
that part.
Yeah, that's the
take two.
I don't know where tamarind would be popular, or do you think it would be a tamarind analog, or would it be that they import tamarind from Earth?
It'd
have to be
an
like
analog.
A tropical place.
Or how about easier cumin? What?
Like Ryza?
Ryza.
I mean, you can get everything on Ryza.
I bet they got all kinds of fruity drinks on Ryza.
Yeah, Ryza's probably. I don't know.
It's fruity at the...
Could be good. Yeah. Although every time people go to Ryza, all sorts of shit goes down.
What do you think...
On Enterprise, on TNG, on Deep Space Nine is a total fucking clusterfuck when they go to Ryza. Worf comes out looking like a piece of shit on that episode.
Yeah, he really does. That's a shitty episode.
Yeah, though. It's a bad episode.
It's like the shittiest Worf episode, and it's on DS9 where he was a little more empowered in DS9, you know?
Hell yeah.
It was a bizarre episode.
But that whole sequence around... Well, how close was that to Terry Farrell? Wait, that's the singer to... Isn't that the
that's
singer?
That's Perry Farrell.
That's Perry Farrell. Oh, it's Terry. Yeah, it is Terry Farrell.
Yeah.
The singer to Porno for Pyros.
I believe that. I think the Ryza episode, I think it was in season 5 of Deep Space Nine, I want to say.
So what season did she leave DS9?
After season 6.
Okay, never mind. Forget all that then. So they
but you think she did that episode and she was like, this episode was so shitty.
No, I quit. I was just wondering if things were felt rushed around that time or something because of events of leaving.
On all these shows, I mean, TNG doesn't escape it either when you're making 26 episodes a year, or at least that's the goal.
Yeah, it's standard to make like 10 episodes
a
cycle now.
I think television
back in the 60s, they did like 30.
Yeah, or more. There were some shows. More, yeah, some of the half-hour shows would do 40, 50 shows
like
a year.
Like Gilligan's Island and
shit. They would have a show every fucking week.
Yeah.
And they were great for reruns, and they hadn't even invented reruns yet. But you can read a ton. Ron Moore writes really, he talks about this a lot in a lot of interviews. Ira Stephen Baer, a lot of the other Star Trek writers about how just intensely, it's so stressful. It was so stressful to write for Star Trek at that time that it almost went beyond being stressful and becoming calm again because it was just like, this is the fucking deal. Ron Moore, when he talked about when he first came on board at TNG, which I think was season 3-ish, season 3 or 4-ish, somewhere in there, he'd never written on a TV show before. So he just came in and they were all like, okay, here's how it works. At the beginning of the year, we map out the kind of things we want to do. And then we start writing some episodes and they say they get like 4 or 5 episodes written or something, pretty much complete. And then those start filming. And then he said the rest of the fucking season is just catch up. It's just constantly trying to keep up because they're filming these episodes in 7 days. That was the schedule. It was like 7 days, entire episodes, fucking done.
That was like South Park. They had to animate the entire
7 days an episode.
7 days an episode. So like each episode got about 7 days, sometimes a little less. Every now and then they could squeeze out another day, but they basically had to have all the principal photography done. So he said towards the end of the season, you are just writing and writing and writing and show like writing at the, you know, stage while they're acting and giving them pages for the next scene. Cause you're just like, here's this page for the next fucking scene. Wow. And it's stressful for everybody. Cause everyone's just trying to get done and, you know, get the footage in the can. And they don't really have opportunities for going back and shooting pickup shots and things like that. So it had to be very stressful. And so that's why you see episodes that are maybe not as tightly written as you're used to. I think that often happens towards the end of the season. You see a lot of bottle episodes where you're trying to save some money or just simplify the story so you can just rely on the standing sets that you already have. So you don't have to do a whole lot with new sets and things.
They made a whole set just for that play. Riker was tearing it all down at the end.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, for the cafeteria and for his room and stuff. Yeah, so they did a good job.
He didn't remember his own name. Now, why would his brain do that? Not remember its own name? Maybe, why would his brain not remember his own name?
Maybe they poked him and turned that part off or something.
Yeah, that's one of the things. There were these little things they would drop that make me think that they're trying to get at bits of information about him. And then that seemed like it was either him resisting or they poked his brain part and made him forget. Or they were setting him up to fool him into thinking it was real so they could really get the info, but it was, none of it was like that. And that's not neither good nor bad, but it's definitely not where I thought it was going, and maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But at the same time, for it all be summed up as a neurosomatic technique, I mean, we already talked about this, but it's just kind of, it's like fine, because I guess if you leave it open, you can look at the episode as this sort of anonymous object of things where you can just kind of like, there's a lot of evidence to point at different ideas. The whole point of the episode was like really not, the whole point of the episode is you're just trying to figure out what he thinks is real and isn't, I guess.
It was a similar to last week's Cause and Effect. It was a story that was engaging and interesting, but there was not much there beyond that. And I think one reason why we're sort of grasping at explanations for exactly what happened when and how did it happen is partly because there's nothing else undergirding it. So our minds are reaching out for something to think about. And I think we could compare contrast this to another similar thing that we saw late in Deep Space Nine, which was when Sisko is basically, the Pah Wraiths have gotten into his brain basically, and he's imagining himself as Benny Russell, the 1950s sci-fi writer, and he's been imprisoned in a mental institution.
But see, okay, so
and that one, that my point is that one, first of all, they solve the problem of the tech. They just say Pah Wraiths. Okay, all right, Pah Wraiths. We just assume they can do whatever. And in there was a very specific message of they're trying to get information out of his head. I'm talking about, I think it was it wasn't Rocks and Shoals. It was a 6th season episode where they're basically infecting his mind and they're trying to get information from him, and it all furthers the story, right? And in this case, there's no story to be furthered. This is the story.
Well, then going towards purpose of episodes, the one with this DS9 episode you just referenced obviously has, you know, very strong sort of commentary.
Well, like, you're talking about, I'm actually talking about a different, just to clarify, I'm not talking about Far Beyond the Stars, which is, that's one episode, right, where we first meet Sisko's Benny Russell character, right? Later in Deep Space Nine, what happens in season 6, I believe, it could be, or maybe it's season 7, actually, maybe starting with Ezri Dax, Sisko, it could be season 7. The Pah Wraiths are basically starting to, like, Sisko's flashing back and forth between reality and being Benny Russell, except in this case, instead of being a sci-fi writer in an office, Benny Russell is in a mental institution, and human-looking Damar is acting as like a doctor and basically getting him to stop writing the story. He's like writing the story of Deep Space Nine on the wall, and he's saying, you have to stop writing the story. And that is we learn that there's a function behind it. The evil paw wraiths are trying to trick Sisko into ending his mission because they fear that he is going to be successful. And that the long and short of that is that there is again a motivating factor of plot and for the overall story of Deep Space Nine. We don't have that here in this TNG episode. This is a standalone episode. It is what it is. Yeah, and that's it.
But also, like we had talked about earlier in the episode, the one thing that what cause and effect, we talked about how cause and effect didn't have really any sort of, it wasn't really relatable on a sort of a, I don't want to say it's not relatable, that's not fair because it's presumptuous, but it's not on a personal emotional level, not really that relatable, whereas this episode kind of is. And so I guess when I'm seeing a connection to like what it might be like to lose your mind,
yeah,
maybe I'm trying to grasp at more like reasons behind what's happening that aren't there or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right.
But also there's that, and then also the thing about cause and effect that it did have is it was like a puzzle to be solved.
Yes.
There was no puzzle to solve
here.
Yeah, you
couldn't solve this puzzle.
Yeah, that's... So maybe... So there's also that where it's like, I'm trying to find... I know, even though... it's very clear when there's certain episodes of Star Trek or whatever show where the plot just doesn't really matter. It's whatever device got them into this point they're trying to get across, that's all that matters. So it's kind of like... grasping at like, well, how does this all fit together?
Because there isn't really a point.
Yeah,
other than it sucks to go insane.
Yeah, right. And it's a neat display of like the actor's abilities, like you were saying before too. Yeah, I guess I guess it's just the I don't know why it just bugs me and it shouldn't bug me. Like, well,
there is for better or worse. The other thing this episode has that's different than cause and effect is that, you know, Riker. There is some level of threat to Riker in the sense that we don't know exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly how he's going to react. And in fact, he often reacts in ways we don't expect him to. So he rejects the hallucinations of his friends. You know, he decides to stay in the mental institution. He fights, you know, Worf and Data. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Cause and Effect, the plot was basically a number of very competent people are going through a weird event. And through their competence, they resolve the problem.
Through their competence, they solve the problem.
Where, that doesn't really, I mean, it kind of happens here in the sense that, you know, Riker eventually shakes free. But the thing is when
it's kind of like when he shook free, it was kind of like when I'm dreaming and the bombs are falling and then the explosion reaches me and then
Christ,
I wake up.
That's terrifying.
You know, those like, you know, the dying dreams.
Oh yeah, those dreams where the bombs are just falling.
You never, like, I've had that like a few times where a plane flies over and a bomb starts falling out.
I never have that.
And it hits like a few hundred feet down the road, and then it hits, and I see the smoke and the clouds and all the dust and all the shit like,
damn,
from the bomb coming at me, and I'm watching it come at me. When it hits me, I wake up.
Whoa. I would prefer that stress dream to the one I haven't had. This
stress dream for sure.
I haven't had in years, but I remember having. I haven't had dreams in years, quite frankly. But all my dreams are dead.
Bummer.
But you know those stress dreams where you're like, I have an appointment. I have to be at this place and meet these people, and then like a series of things gets in the way. Like,
yeah.
Traffic, and it gets increasingly more ridiculous until you're just trying to walk, and you're walking all slow, and you're like, "Why the fuck am I walking all slow?"
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah, when like, in, like
I would prefer
and, like,
the bombs.
Then it starts to like hurt to walk, and like you can't walk. It's like I'm not getting anywhere.
Like, yeah, I would get that with waiting tables. I remember, and like I'd be trying to pour this cup of coffee, and every time I turned, like the cream would go missing, or like the cup would fall over. Something was preventing me from pouring this coffee, and like more tables just keep getting sat while I'm doing this, and I'm just like losing my mind. So
it's like I'm not gonna be able to pour coffee for all of these people.
Yeah, I can't even pour it for one. They probably want food too. So yeah, those stress dreams suck. But yeah, the ones where I blow up is just kind of like it's just momentary. Those other stress dreams that you're talking about, they're like the drawn out fuck this, I want to wake up.
That's normal stuff. People don't have dreams where you get blown up.
I mean, probably something similar, right?
I mean, maybe people have gone through that.
Yeah. Oh God! Yes,
like people who live through the Blitz, hiding out in tube tunnels, huddled together with their family as the walls shake and shudder.
Well, now I feel like a poser.
That was rough
from
business.
The Nazi bombs.
Yeah, I got it pretty good.
Yep, you live in North America.
Yeah, so that's more sort of. evidence towards the dream scenario where he was like, well, if I shoot myself in the thing, then I'll wake up for sure. You know, it's like, what's to say that he didn't just wake up from another, you know, level of totemness or whatever that Inception shit was called.
Right.
I shouldn't reference Inception because this came before Inception. That's stupid.
Nah, but it's a good cultural milestone. Yeah. It's not exactly the same thing, obviously, because this isn't layers upon layers, but...
Although they did do a minor blow up at the end where he like, was it, he kind of like, he blew up from like the there was like, he blew up. You know,
you're talking about when he got all shattered.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, when he was shattered he shattered in the hospital, and then he woke up on the Enterprise, and then he exploded back to the hospital, and then he exploded to the play, and then people were doing that weird clapping thing where every time he pushed the dude, they clapped more, and then he exploded to the science table. So
Data was so like, you know, I like how you improvised that.
Yeah, yeah, Data, that was awesome.
Maybe all Star Trek after this is just in Riker's brain.
Data was like, you gave a truly realistic interpretation of multi-infarctal dementia. Infarctal? Is that? I don't know what it was.
Something like that.
Something multi-infarctal. But that's, you know, that's the thing, though, is that him...
Multipass.
Him shooting himself didn't even really wake him up. He woke in the TNG, and then he shot himself, which put him in the hospital, but then he still had the phaser... Yeah, it was weird. Like, why did that... It's nothing like waking up from a bomb dream. Because, like, I'm not still holding the bomb.
Why did you think?
Why the bomb wasn't still there when I woke up? I just woke up. He shot himself and for some reason still had the phaser. But, like, it wasn't a real phaser anyway. Yeah,
so
none of it made
said,
it.
Yeah.
It didn't even make any sense.
I would be really interested to hear from anybody...
I guess he was just getting back to reality somehow.
But anybody who's had like a proper psychic break or something like this, like a perceptual break, it's where it's interesting is that everyone obviously has their own unique perspective on life built in their own brain from their experience and everything else. And those perspectives, of course, can shift through time and can change depending on whatever. But generally speaking, you know, we're even if our perspectives are shifting in a massive way, it's kind of like growing. You know, if you're hanging out with somebody, you don't see them grow taller or fatter or thinner.
Right.
You don't, you notice it one day, but you don't notice it when it's happening because it's a process. Whereas in this case,
you guys are always growing beards and I never notice. Like, wait a minute. It's like, oh wait, yes. So-and-so has got this big old beard now.
It goes back and forth. And you know, I really do give credit to both Jonathan Frakes and to the director. This was directed by James L. Conway, who directed a ton of Star Trek, as I recall, because it is really difficult to handle that shifting back and forth, especially when you have an audience that knows full well at the very base level. We might not know exactly what's going on, but we know that Star Trek is real.
Star Trek is real.
And we know that whatever's going on with Riker, that this guy is either a hallucination or he's actively lying to Riker or whatever. So that's a difficulty for the writers and producers from the get-go, because obviously we know whatever's going on, Riker is a real person, and when they say he's not, that's a lie or that's some sort of a subterfuge, right? So they've got to overcome that as best they can. And the other thing that they have to do that's very difficult in this episode, and I think they are largely successful. They are maybe not successful, you know, at the 100% level, but I think from in terms of what you're able to do on television, they were very successful in terms of really that's again, that switching back and forth from all these different perspectives and keeping you off balance while still giving you some, you know, story to go along with it. It wasn't like some total madness, you know. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think if there's some other examples. There's nothing really that comes to mind that's super analogous. I mean, there's, you know, Jacob's Ladder, which is a horrifying movie.
I keep meaning to see that.
You haven't seen that?
No,
movie?
don't watch it.
Yeah.
Normally, I recommend people watching things. Jacob's Ladder is a fantastic movie, but I think it's caused a permanent wound in my brain.
Well, it's
a fucked up movie.
It's not that bad.
Well, I'm gonna have to watch it then.
It's a weird movie. It's just, but it's a little bit like that where you don't know
it
exactly
sounds,
what's
it sounds
going
right
on.
Up my alley.
It's fucked.
It's fucked up and weird. I think I'll love it. Oh, that's fucked up. That's weird. That's disgusting.
I'm just surprised
depraved.
You haven't seen it yet.
That's disgusting and depraved and weird and completely insidious.
It's not all that.
That's terrible
it's
and
not
depraved.
All of what you just
saying. It's terrible and depraved and awful and crazy and just totally, totally repulsive. I love it. I love it. Now you know something about me.
The title of Dan's biography was like totally repulsive. What was it? Repulsive and totally depraved.
Yeah.
What did you say about a mystery butt person? You said it earlier in the podcast.
Oh, or? Something about a doopity doops or something like
floopity
duties or mystery butt duties or
mystery
something.
Butt duties.
Mystery yeah. butt duties.
Yeah.
Are those like activities that you are assigned?
Or activities.
Mystery butt duties.
Yeah, like mystery butt duties.
Why do policemen smell?
Why?
Because they're always on duty.
All right.
I actually got that from the Gary Shandling show.
Dan's being kind of political.
Because they're racist pieces of shit.
Too political. Pull it down.
Cops
pull down
smell,
the podcast.
Cops smell because
pull it back.
No, that was from the...
Pull it back.
Remember the occupying any, fascists.
Do you ever see the Gary Shandling show?
As not opposed a lot of it, to, as opposed to Larry it. Sanders? Because the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the Gary. This is the Gary.
That's a good show.
Shandling
it's weird,
show.
But it's good.
The Gary Shandling show. Gary yeah, called Gary me up Shandling. And asked if I could sing oh, a theme right. song. Yeah. I said Shandling.
Yeah, that song is funny.
I'm almost halfway finished. Shandling. How do you like it so far? How do you like the theme to Gary show? That's how it goes.
We would be remiss if we didn't comment on Riker's pajamas. Riker's pajamas were really, and you know what? It got me thinking that in Star Trek in general, the pajamas are pretty on point.
We the put, pajamas.
We mentioned that on Twitter, and one person at Mr_Picard goes by Alexander responded to my comment about
Alexander
how awesome Riker's pajamas are. And he said, he responded on Twitter, draw me like one of your French captains, and then has a picture of Captain Picard with like his nice pajamas with his chest is all bared. Yeah. And he's just all like leaning back. I'll send you guys some pictures later on tonight.
Data always looks funny when he's not wearing a Starfleet uniform, when he's just wearing like other clothes. It's always like, looks all goofy.
Brent Spiner's head is kind of like a little bit larger yeah. than I remember it. Sometimes it depends on what he's wearing. Sometimes his head looks
somebody
all big.
Makes his neck look all
I think a lot of
skinny.
Actors have big heads. Looks good on 2D, two dimensions.
What did we watch 2 weeks ago? Was it Discovery? Or what did we watch? Or was it DS9?
Past tense, I think. 2 weeks
ago? Oh, it was past tense. I feel like there was... Yeah, I was thinking about this because I feel like there was a double axe handle in one of the fights in that, but I'm not sure.
I think there was. I think Sisko might have done
yeah, that. There was no double axe handle in this episode. There was only one fight when, you know, when Worf and Data...
Whoopi Goldberg.
No, there was no Whoopi Goldberg... That's true. That's a good. That's
I don't think she was in most
there was
of,
no,
much of the later.
There was no
stuff.
Bunch of other people too. Well, okay. I was just saying they often have a fight and they often do the double axe handle and they just didn't do it in this fight. So I thought that was interesting.
That's a Sisko.
A bit of restraint used by the Star Trek crew.
I do think that
Data was knocking some people around.
Yeah, he likes doing that.
He looked like he was straining a little bit when he grabbed Riker, which you know Data shouldn't strain, but I'm not.
Yeah, but Jonathan Frakes is a big beefy man, as you can see. In his pajamas when he
pajamas
okay. So I was watching the show earlier and my wife came in and she was watching a little bit and she basically walked in right when one of the scenes where Riker is waking up in bed and she was,
I was
all
gonna
like,
say what I think she, gonna
she was all like I want to climb into bed with that guy she's like and then it was partly about Riker but I think most of it was just his bedroom. It looks all super sexy and the lighting is all neat and he's got those shiny sheets.
He's got one of those Ryza statues.
Yeah, he's got a big neon sign on the window that says number one down to clown.
He does have a very inviting bed. I thought you were gonna go with how like when he woke up it kind of expected to see that he had had wet his bed.
Like he's just like record of Dr. Crusher, I pissed my bed again.
Yeah, because he woke up all freaked out and it was his face and it zoomed out and he thought it was gonna zoom out with a wet blanket.
But need a hypo spray.
We gotta get Can Dan writing
the
next Star Trek.
He hypo sprayed that bed.
We gotta get you working on season two of Picard.
Yeah, they need some good shots, something to sort of, you know,
shock the system,
shock the monkey, expect the unexpected.
So unlike you know, we talked about last week about how cause and effect is a really great entryway. You know, it's a good introduction to Star Trek generally in. Particularly TNG, if you're trying to get somebody in, just because you know you don't need really any other information to get in there. I think this is kind of the opposite. I think most of this episode really relies on your understanding of not only Riker himself and his personality, but also his relative relationships to Troy and Beverly and Worf and Picard, etc. it's not that it would make less sense, maybe, but I mean, it just would have less meaning and it would be harder to follow and it'd be harder to understand what his motivations were. Because if you don't know these people, when he's struggling between whether to believe, you know, Beverly, the quote unquote Beverly who snuck in pretending to be a health inspector.
While he was eating his olive grain.
Health inspector.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Or whatever.
They're not going to let some human in to like look for the only other.
Yeah,
human
that didn't make sense either. Yeah. I thought they would do more with Riker calling out some of those things that didn't make as much sense.
Why would his brain invent a woman who's going crazy with the spoon? I don't know. It doesn't. There's no point in asking questions.
Well, I think we have to assume that even though they don't really explain it, a lot of this is
audience misdirection
at a foundational level. It is Riker's brain making stuff up, but then there are manipulations by the people who have imprisoned him because they're trying to get information. This is effectively an interrogation. And we have to assume that they had some mechanism for inputting into his brain.
So you are saying they were doing more than just poking needles at his brain wrinkles.
I think we have to assume, I mean, even if that was the mechanism, maybe that's how they did it. Maybe you poke needles in brain wrinkles to create
Poke needles in brain wrinkles.
We have to assume that because otherwise the story really starts to fucking fall apart.
That's what I've been getting at this whole time is like, is it brain needles or is it an invented scenario to trick him? So you're saying the reflective therapy or whatever, the reflection therapy, was that a method to convince him to give away secret information? Like, I can't get out with these needles.
That's what they're going for.
No, 100%. Let me qualify that statement. Yes, I think that was a part of getting information from him. It may not have been the part where they were actually getting the information itself, but it was priming him. It was creating a scenario where then he would be willing to give them the information. Now, again, they didn't get that far in this plot, so you know, when they've at the end of the episode, when they actually real life for realsies rescue him, they basically say they were trying to root around in his brain to extract the information. But we don't know whether they were actually looking, trying to get that information as if you were like trying to find a file on a hard drive, or if they were going to have to manipulate his conscious mind into revealing that information to him.
So in which case Mavic was invented by them, not him.
I no way to tell. Presumably, I mean, I guess you could presume anybody who, you know, fit that description was invented by, unless he based it off of, like, see, this is the thing, is where we don't have the information. If he did go down to the planet in disguise and hung around that southwestern corner,
that could have been the dude
whatever,
that he fought with and killed.
Yeah, it could have been a bartender at a bar he went to. It could have been the guy who ran the brothel that he no doubt went to before bothering to look for the researchers. You know, it could have been a lot of different people. But anyway, I don't know. It's just this story is a good story, but it does sort of fall off the rails a little because there's nothing undergirding it, because we don't know enough of what the goals were and what was going to happen, what the mechanisms were.
We don't know what really got invented and what actually happened, which is part of the point in one respect, but it feels like there could have been a little bit more grounding to sort of give us something to like go relative off of, but I don't know. I guess I don't have any suggestions for what direction to go in, because, you know, who knows what I don't. Every time I think I know how something's going to go because it's so predictable, it's like, well, I'm wrong often. Wrong because it's like I just don't know because I'm not as smart as I think I am about this.
Well,
shit,
and the other thing is that you could do this in a number of different ways. One thing that I was kind of surprised that they didn't do more in this episode was have Riker really, really dig into the inconsistencies and strange things, like, for example, Beverly showing up or whatever, you know,
right.
Just they could have rewritten the show in such a way as that there's all these clues that things just don't quite match up. And that he starts to realize, he realizes right away that something's weird. Right. And then make the challenge of the episode that if he is to be convinced that he is this person in a mental institution, that it is something he comes to very slowly and only towards the end. And then even then, I would probably have the story be that when push comes to shove, he decides to go with the people he inherit, you know, he just from the inside feels that he can trust, because that still seems to be there. You know, when he sees images, even though they're not real, he sees Beverly or whoever, he does feel more inclined to believe them at first, and then he doesn't. It's a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of how it plays out. They got 43 minutes to tell a story, and you know, that this is the story that we ended up getting. So I don't know. It's, again, fun, enjoyable, entertaining, a little bit slight when you start poking into it too much.
I don't like to get into the game of better or worse, but I think I was more...
I love that game.
I was more drawn into this than cause and effect, this go around. I was more drawn into this episode.
I think it's more compelling in a lot of ways.
Compelling, that's the word I was looking for.
Cause and effect is one of the most tightly written little sci-fi vignettes.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
It is really great, but I still cite it as one of my favorite episodes, but you can have a favorite episode that doesn't do it for you as much anymore just because the structure of the story is not sustainable over many years.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Cause and effect really can just, it's just always what it is, and it's always like, there's really not much for my opinion to really waver. I don't know. It seems like with stuff like... frame of mind. It seems like because that touches on the mind in such an in such a weird, intense way. I guess I could vary back and forth between, whoa, it was really intriguing, to, oh, it was kind of like, doesn't make sense, or, oh, that's played out. You know, I guess I could waver between those, but cause and effect, it's always just kind of like what it is. So,
yeah,
you know, and that's good or bad, I don't know, because, like, on the one hand, you want to take risks. Cause and effect didn't really take any risks in that sense, but it was also really, like you said, it didn't have to, because something's got to make something cool, and they did it, you know. So it's not like they have to take these crazy risks every time. It's just doing that thing where you go back on what you say. I forget though, but anyways, because you did point out with cause and effect, it did, the way it told the story was kind of, you know, pretty interesting for the time. It began with the shit blowing up. So I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but
well, what the fuck are you doing on this podcast?
I don't know.
This is for experts only.
I'm just here to make noise.
I'm not qualified.
Yeah, I just think no, you totally are, Jesse. I'm not qualified.
Well, the
I think there's more. I think my mood can change on frame of mind more than it would on cause and effect.
And this is, I think this is an episode that can serve as a very good example of how even a very well executed, well put together, very engaging story suffered from the ironclad requirement in that period of television, particularly Star Trek The Next Generation in particular, being a syndicated show that was often shown out of order, that everything had to be reset by the end of the episode. Everything basically had to be better. And TNG did a very good job over 7 seasons, like, stretching the limits of that as much as possible. They did it with some 2-part episodes. They did it with some, you know, like After the Best of Both Worlds, the family follow up. And then there's a couple other times where you do sense there is some character growth, but it inches forward. Mm-hmm. Most TNG episodes, largely at the end, it's either a complete reset button, or you might get Picard looking out the window thinking about something, or Data looking at,
like,
something funny.
You see the Enterprise go by and they play that certain kind of music that's all like, yeah. It's like, okay, everything's better now and everything's back to normal.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's usually there's some kind of like log. Somebody's doing a log entry.
Right.
It's usually the captain. It's like, yeah.
It ties it up. And you can compare that to now we're kind of in the opposite area where they will not let shows be episodic. And so now Discovery or Picard,
like almost every show that's on TV is now is like a
fully serial.
Ever since we watched Year of Hell in on Voyager, my Google News feed on my phone has been talking about Year of Hell was supposed to be a whole season, but they didn't want to make it a whole season because Rick Berman was super anti serialized.
Yeah.
He was,
and not just him. I mean, that was the vibe.
Yeah, that was the vibe. I think one of the articles was, I think the headline was pointing it to him, but like, it's a random internet article. It's just funny that I kept seeing things about Year of Hell being a whole season. You know,
that wasn't something that they did, like, you know, back in the day, like, because even. There was like that Seinfeld season where there's an arc in the story. There isn't like, it isn't like a chronological, it isn't a serial, but there's the ongoing shit where, like, George is getting married. And that was something that you didn't see in TV a whole lot. Way back in the day. Outside of like a soap opera, right?
Yeah. The, X-Files didn't even really start doing it until the later season.
And even then, it was still closed loop episodes that add to an overall story.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, X-Files, I think, was very groundbreaking. They moved us in that direction. Now, we have the opposite issue now, of course, where the current shows have difficulty if they get an idea that would be really great as a purely episodic type one-off, you know, because it still has to fit into the overall arc. I've been noticing that recently, you know, I've been watching season 3 of Enterprise, and that's where they try, for the first time, they try to start mimicking the DS9 style arc storytelling, where there's sort of a season-long arc. In that case, it's with the Zindi and going into the Expanse and trying to find all that stuff. Zindi. So every single episode is still quote-unquote episodic, but huge chunks of it, and usually the main plot, are driven by that arc in the background. Now, the difference is, as an Enterprise, it's sort of stripped down and simplified as compared to Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine, the arc's built more sort of organically and sort of interwove with each other in different ways, whereas in Enterprise, it was very laser-focused, which was kind of a proto-version of what we now have, where it's 100% every single episode has to be solely focused on this main arc.
Enterprise had, was that the same season where they would have like these three episode?
No, that was in the fourth season.
That was the fourth season where they do these sort of half arcs where they do these weird 3-4 episode.
That was a totally different things. Thing they tried.
That was a weird thing that they
that
did.
That was pretty cool. The complaint you'll hear from some people there, which is not totally unfounded, is that the problem with season 4 is the arc that style kind of works because it's like these tight little 3 or 4 episode arcs, except if you get into an arc that you're not into, because then you're like, oh well,
that would happen like at least three of these. It happened at least once where I'd start watching it and then I'd realize at some point, oh, this is going to be one of those, and I'd be like, ah.
But season 3 of Enterprise does a pretty good job of still telling what would be normally considered an episodic story. Like, for example, the episode, I think it's called Timeless or something. No, what is it called? Twilight. It's called Twilight, where Captain Archer, there's like a spatial malformation and he gets some bugs in his brain and he can't make new memories.
Bugs in his brain.
So it's basically the Memento story with Archer, right? And
that happened to me one time.
And that story is an episodic story, as in everything gets fixed at the end of the episode. All these horrible things and interesting things happen in the episode, but it's also still plugged into the overall arc because what happened, you see how the arc would have played out in one way, and then because of the course of the events, they are able to make some corrections to that. So, you know, Enterprise was more mature than TNG and had some more latitude to do this type of stuff than TNG was able to at the time.
This might be unfair because it's the most obvious and one of the most obvious and infamous examples in TNG, but of course the time when they decided that warp drive was going to fuck up space-time or whatever. So, like, that's an example of where they had the whole episode in one, but now they had this whole, didn't just change the course of the story, it changed the whole way the universe worked.
And then they sort of ignored that.
And then they sort of ignored it. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of other times where they really made big changes. I mean, of course, there was when Locutus and that whole deal and stuff, and there's...
But even that, you know, that pops up from time to time.
Yeah,
but it's
right.
Not like it's a constant thing.
Right.
I don't know. And I'm not complaining about TNG. I understand the constraints they're in. And I actually think that particularly in the last couple years of TNG, they did a much better job of not just, they didn't have season long arcs, but they were adding stuff to the greater world, just as the greater universe, as it was expanding, just as Deep Space Nine was coming on and then leading into Voyager. Mm. So they were planting all these seeds like the Maquis and the Cardassians and the Bajorans and you know, all sorts of stuff with the Romulans that becomes important later. So it was more of an expanded universe. And I really think that there's a role for both things. I think that you can do a really great arc style serialized story over the course of 10 or 15 episodes. I think that's great. But I also, as I've mentioned before, I am hoping with, like, you know, with Strange New Worlds, the Pike show, for example, that's coming out, and some of the other, that they opt for a little bit more of an episodic style, maybe in the Enterprise style, where there could be some sort of overarching background thing going on, but that for the most part, they are doing what they did on TOS, which was the mission was to go around and explore shit, and occasionally Starfleet would call up and be like, okay, we need you to deal with the Klingons, or we need you to deal with this, you know, but for the most part, it was, here's a new planet, here's some interesting people, people, here's some moral dilemmas, and we'll have an interesting story play out in order to convey some interesting messages of some sort.
Yeah. That's TNG also for most of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, when people complain about the modern Trek, a lot of folks are really, they want to have that episodic feeling because the advantage to it, there are disadvantages in terms of slower or non-existent character growth, everything having to kind of reset at the end, be self-contained. That can be very constraining from a storytelling perspective. On the other hand, it is very comfortable. Like, TNG is one of the most comfortable shows to watch.
That made me...
I often just kind of sack out while I'm watching.
Yeah, and you just pop one on. And
like, wake up and it's like it's like two episodes later or something. It's like, what happened?
That made me think of like how episodic shows then to sort of freshen themselves up is in the later seasons they'd introduce a new character.
Yeah, like a 10-year-old boy named Skip.
There was, what was that?
Hi, I'm Skip.
Seven in Married with Children. There was a young kid.
Did they you say added, Seven of Nine?
It was just Seven. The kid's name was Seven. I did not say Seven of Nine.
Is that for real?
That's for real. In Married with Children, they added a kid. Like,
I remember them adding the kid. I don't remember the name being Seven.
I'm almost sure. Yeah. I'm almost positive it's Seven. But
that show like had so many like twists and turns that like lasted forever. Yeah, and, like,
it did. But then I was thinking about when you're talking about character, little to no character development. I was thinking like, well, let's see. They added Barkley. They added Roe. And so that's not really character development. That's just adding a new character. So it's kind of interesting. In lieu of like character development, what do you do to keep things fresh, I guess? So you got to find a good balance.
I'm not against constraints and challenges because I think some of the best creations come out of those constraints and challenges, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not against it. I would not change TNG for what it was, and I'm glad we have it. Also, I'm not against the serialized storytelling that we are getting now. I also really like that. I just think that there's room for both, and I'm hoping that the producers and the powers that be kind of understand that there can be a room for both or a melding of the two. And I think a very good example of this is The Mandalorian. I think The Mandalorian did a really good job of having what was effectively a season-long arc that presumably will be continuing in some fashion, but each episode, obviously it makes more sense that you have to watch it from the beginning to make it all have sense. But each episode is kind of, you know, these little stories where he comes into town and does this, or he meets this guy and does this.
It's like a total Western or something.
Well, and it kind of goes to, I really got a kick out of, I normally don't read these, but the official episode summary for Frame of Mind tickled me for some reason. It said, on a secret mission to a troubled planet, Riker questions his psychological stability after experiencing a series of confusing vignettes. I was like, that's a really strange way to describe this episode. Yeah. It's accurate, but it's a weird way to describe it. Just like a bunch of confusing vignettes.
That's what you experience. That's not what he experienced.
Yeah, so we experienced watching it.
So Riker, I counted, he said, no! Six times.
Nine times.
Six times.
Nine times.
He said no in a regular tone, including the exclamation point.
He's, I will kick you nine times.
He says no with or without an exclamation point. He says about 15. And then there were 19 words with that had NO as a substring. But
Dan is all about the counting.
So man, speaking of
some notes.
Speaking of callback, now this is not a good recording, so we can cut this or not, but I'm gonna play it anyways.
Is it a recording of you going like
this always gets podcast listeners excited when somebody announces something as poorly recorded and probably not worth it.
Check it out. I already had this recorded, so listen closely. Wait a second. It comes out the ear. Which part does it come out of?
I hope it comes out the ear.
Comes out the ace.
It's not true.
Yes, it is. And if you ever get out of here, you're going to stand trial.
You're lying.
I imagine the punishment will be quite severe, considering you stabbed him nine times.
Nine times. That's where the nine times comes from. You stabbed him nine times.
See, I thought it was going to be a recording of you just reading the lines.
No!
Saying no.
Out of context. There's a great there's a Twitter feed called like Star Trek Out of Context or something, and it always just has like pictures, like screen caps from the show, and then you know, the line, but it does, you know, anyway, go check it out.
What's interesting is
go check it out on
that's
social media.
That's the only thing I recorded, and that was happened to be the thing you thought of about the nine times. He was just so smarmy and gross, or is that the word I'm looking for? Smarmy? No, smarmy's not the right word.
Mavek?
He was, because he was just like, yeah, it is. If you get out of here, you're going to stand trial. I imagine the punishment will be quite severe, considering you stabbed him nine times.
You sound just like Maven.
Pretty good for a crazy man.
Yeah, exactly. What a dick, right? Why did he have to be a dick like that?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Dan's impersonation of Mavek.
Oh, shit.
But it was pretty good for a crazy man.
Oh, no. Oh, snap.
I was quoting dialogue.
Smarmy, ingratiating and wheedling in a way that is perceived as insincere or excessive. No, he wasn't smarmy at all. He was just
wheedling.
He was just being like, nya-nya-nya, boo-boo. That's what he was being.
It was creepy. I mean, I know it was a hallucination or a, you know, manifestation or whatever the fuck you want to call it, but it was definitely creepy and disturbing. But anyway, so I guess that about does it.
It had some Star Trek.
I will do it nine times.
For
yeah. I will kick you. I will do it nine times.
So that's Frame of Mind.
Strong.
Star Trek, The Next Generation, Season 6, Episode 21. This show that you're listening to, which we forgot to announce earlier because we're fucking fools, is...
Suck, bro.
It's got Star Trek.
We had Star Trek.
It's got Star Trek. The It's Got Star Trek podcast coming to you from space.
So there was a comment about, like, why don't I like Waxana episodes? And, you know what? And I just want to say briefly that I realize that
wasn't Tarek just messing with you?
Yeah, I'm sure he was. But I want to say that I know it's like a cool and popular thing to say, oh, Waxana episodes suck, man. It's like, I'm a real Star Trek fan because I think Waxana sucks. I don't think
she doesn't suck.
She doesn't suck.
No.
It's just the way those episodes when it's all like Troy being, when it's Deanna being like, Mom, and Loxana's like, you should get a man.
Right.
You know, and
right.
It's just like, ugh. And maybe that only happened one episode. I don't even know. All I know is that my memories, and I'm going to have to rewatch them just to be fair. But I just remember from TNG, it was one of those things that every time one of those episodes came on, it just so happened, I was just like, oh, I don't care about any of this. Now, with that said, is it just because it's silly? Because I'm a silly guy. I like silly things. I also am not a huge fan, and I'll have to rewatch this again, but like the episode where Worf's all like, I am not a merry man. I mean, that line is funny, but that episode, I don't...
The Robin Hood episode is a little...
Yeah, and so it's like, I think some of those episodes, even though I really dig the silly shit,
That's really the high point of the episode where he's like, I am not a merry man.
Yeah, and I think it's just those kind of silly episodes. But then, on the other hand... Show like Breaking Bad, for example. A ton of people hate that fly episode. If you ever saw Breaking Bad, there's a fly episode dead in the middle of it.
People hate that?
People
That's a great episode.
It's a great episode.
It's really great.
That's the thing. It's a great episode, but a lot of people hate it. And the reason I think, and it's probably this has probably been pointed out, but is that it just takes you away from the main story. It's kind of a break from the story. And Breaking Bad presented itself in such a way that was always trying to like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And this is like taking you out of that. I don't know. But then again,
it's a TNG style episode.
So I see that it's difficult for me to pinpoint exactly why I don't like the episodes. And though another point was made that's good is, I think Patrick, you were saying, and it's true that on DS9, they do better stuff with their character.
Yeah. And I think even on TNG, I mean, Half a Life with Loxana is, I think, arguably a good episode. I think it's a very good episode. That's the episode where the fellow from MASH, plays the guy from the alien race that when they turn 60 or something, they, you know, get put on an iceberg or something, they kill themselves. And that's just their culture. And Loxana, I think, wants him to leave with her and all this.
Which guy from MASH is it?
The doctor. It's like one of the doctors.
Alan Alda?
No, the other one.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's every episode when I'm like, she's always, because the picture I always have in my head is Loxana like chasing after Picard, Troy being embarrassed by her because of everything she does, and then also annoyed by her because she gets on her case about finding a man or something. I don't know how much of this I'm inventing and how much of this only happened in one episode that I'm attributing to all of the episodes.
Well, we'll add it to the queue. We'll add. We'll start doing Loxana episodes from the beginning, and then we can maybe even put a bundle, a couple of them together.
We'll do a whole series of episodes.
Loxana.
We can
episode one.
That can be next year's theme.
Yeah, we don't have to do one for every episode, I don't think.
But we could bundle them together. We could watch all those episodes and then discuss the arc of Loxana Troy.
It is. I think it's a fair question, though, to ask, why don't you like Loxana episodes? Because it's just kind of taken for granted, I think,
Some of them are early, you know, some of them are earlier on. You know, some people just don't like seeing Captain Picard feel all weird. You know, it could be the kind of thing where, like, something that's annoying when you're a kid, you find less annoying later.
It was awesome when he felt weird by those kids in the turbo
lift.
It's
always awesome when he feels weird. Yeah. I mean, come on, that's what you want to see.
You want to see Picard be all like,
be like uncomfortable and making faces and shit, be like,
maybe people don't want to see him be weird in a sexual way, because people like seeing him being weird. They like him seeing him sexual, but weird while he's sexual, you know. Yes. Put in a sexual, yes. He's not being sexual, but feeling awkward in a sexual situation.
I don't think that happens to Picard.
I want to see him get down with Vash.
That's which one was Vash
on Ryza? She's like the archaeologist.
Oh, lady. That's right. Yeah, the archaeologist. Right, he wasn't awkward there. Archaeologist. So he was only awkward around Loxana. And so I want to always imagine that he's confident in a sexual scenario. And I'm with sure Loxana, he's not confident.
With Loxana, I think...
That chick's nuts, man.
The key thing... We're just having the Loxana episode now. But a preview of what we'll discuss in the future.
She wasn't in this frame of mind.
She wasn't. This is just all about Dan responding to comments, online comments.
Hey, that's what we do.
Yes, that's what we do. So send in your comments, and we'll tell you how to do that in just 1 second. But with the Loxana. There are a couple things going on. First of all, I think some of the episodes she's in, the episodes themselves are somewhat weak, not because of her per se, just the episode's just not as engaging, right? So I think that's the case in some cases. In the other aspect of it is Picard is uncomfortable not because he's some kind of weirdo who can't handle like ladies. It's because of the unique circumstance where this is the mother of one of his senior staff members. She has a high important level role with the Beta Z government.
Of course.
So he's got to deal with the fact that on the one hand, she's a loose cannon. She's like a goofy, crazy, like eccentric person. And all those three together put him in the difficult position as a diplomat, as a leader, as a person who's all about following the rules and protocols and understanding them. And she doesn't fit into any of those boxes that he's trained or used to dealing with, right?
Right.
Because he doesn't want to offend her, because he doesn't want to, cause problems for his senior staff member. He doesn't want to cause a diplomatic issue, but she's trying to fucking grab his dick constantly. She's just trying to grab his dick. And if you're in a situation where you're like, I'm not keen on this person grabbing my dick, I'm sure he would have less of a problem if it was somebody else who was if it was just some random alien lady who was trying to grab his dick, which does happen from time to time.
Yeah,
he'll just be like, no, thank you. Pardon me. My dick is occupied.
And that's on a deeper level. That's more the root of it. I was more going for, like, on the surface level, the intersection of control and sexuality. And, like, you know...
reason why I like Loxana is that she is so free and open and doesn't mind kind of... She knows she's pissing people off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes she feels bad about it, but she's all about being herself, for better or for worse. Sometimes it's for worse, but you know, she's an ebullient, flamboyant person, and she likes to stick it out there and grab on dicks, and very frequently it's successful for her. She's been married like 12 times or some
various
shit.
Various aliens.
It was strangely heartwarming how, like, when she was naked at her wedding, she wasn't supposed to be naked at, like, that was, it was like I said, it felt good, but like in an appropriate way, obviously. It's just like,
oh, well,
it's such an out there thing.
She wasn't supposed to be naked because the person she was marrying wasn't right. Cool with it.
Right, exactly. And he was like, she was trying to get married to him and he was trying to control her. And it was her being free with what she believed in. And, you know, for me, it's like such an alien thing to be just like casually walking around naked at a thing. But that's what they do there. That's cool. That's all about the point I'm getting at is I thought it was a nice scene, actually. So, you know.
Well, and then you go to Deep Space Nine and you end up seeing what is a better fulfillment of the same dynamic where she's, in that case, she's primarily interacting with Odo. And Odo, similar to Picard, is somebody who's sort of not uptight is probably more appropriate for Odo than Picard. But, you know, in that vein, you know, kind of stiff upper lip, kinds of pays attention to how they present themselves and how they are presented to the world and all that. And the interaction between them is much more interesting, much more sweet, has more sort of emotional impact than much of what she did on TNG, I think. But anyway, we'll expound on that at some point in the distant future.
Because Odo just doesn't have a regular penis. He's got like some kind of gelatinous penis.
Odo's got whatever you need him to have.
Whatever you need.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Did they ever discuss how they
it could be like,
procreate?
It could be a big fist. It could be a knife.
There was a character in Clay Fighter that could do that on Super Nintendo. There was a character that could turn into all sorts of stuff. But you're also kind of talking about the Green Lantern or something, or is it the Green Arrow? No, the Green Lantern. How did they how did they procreate in Odo Changeling Land?
They didn't specify.
I don't think they procreated. I think they were just kind of always were.
They just made more goo.
Odo found a baby. Kind of a baby changeling that one time.
Yeah.
So that'll do it for this week.
So buttons.
Frame of mind, good, flawed, fun, engaging, weird, confusing, episodic.
Cool episode.
So you can reach us in a variety of ways. Jesse, do you know where to reach us?
Yeah.
All right, tell us and tell the audience.
He doesn't know.
I think there's various ways to reach
evidently us. He doesn't know.
Evidently.
All right.
There's a Facebook, I think. There's a YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube. There's Facebook.
That you can do the feedback.
All right. I just thought I'd change it up because I'm always putting Dan on the spot.
Somebody should ask Dan about how to get to us because
why don't I put Patrick on the spot?
All right, yeah, because I know all the answers.
Well, I knew all the feedback. I know all the answers. Dude,
all right, then you tell them. You tell them, Dan.
Well,
you tell them.
Nobody tells me what to do.
I'm telling you what to do right now.
What the fuck?
I think there's an itsgotstartrek.com.
Yeah, itsgotstartrek.com. That is the website.
You know, Beverly was pissed that play didn't go off that one time when he freaked out in the middle. She was pissed.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm worried about your health, but she was pissed about the play.
She was going to poison him after the play. She's going to slowly poison him over the next 3 years.
It's got Star Trek.
Dr. Feel Good.
At It's Got Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Feedback at It's Got Star Trek.
Are you telling me so I remember next time?
No, I'm
is
just.
Is that why you're looking at me?
I'm sorry. Man, why are people getting on my case about looking at him? I'm just going to stare at the wall because it doesn't matter. We shouldn't have to look at each other in order to have a conversation because we're robots. We don't need to look at each other.
Why aren't you making eye contact?
We're not even in the same room anymore.
We're not impressing each other. We're impressing the audience, and looking at each other's reactions have no effect on the way we respond to comments.
I assure you, we are not impressing the audience. That much I think that is clear.
We suck, bruh.
But yeah,
we fucked it up this time.
Dan was referencing at It's Got Star Trek, and what he meant to say by that is on Twitter and Instagram.
Still finding problems with what I said.
And in Facebook, you can find us at It's Got at
Instagram.
Symbol. Looks like a little snail.
That Worf knife dance, the Niv-Fa, or what is it? It was a Nisra.
Nisra.
That dance before he stabbed Riker, that was a weird dance. That was a weird, awkward moment.
Worf was being really weird.
Yeah. That didn't make any sense. Yeah.
Anyway, it's got Star Trek on social media.
He invented it.
On YouTube,
he's
it's got Star
head.
Trek.
That's why.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Send them all our way. Send all that fun stuff our way. We'll incorporate your comments into the next discussion. All right, so now the last thing we need to do before we say our fond goodbyes
buy
for
some
the week.
T-shirts.
We'll get the store up soon. And you can buy t-shirts and mugs, and
coffee mugs,
stickers, and
mugs.
Whatever else we
tea bags?
Decide to put
Did you say
tea mugs
is
or
tea bags
mugs.
Is a good idea. Let's do tea bags.
It's got Star Trek's tea bags.
I want to do It's Got Star Trek tea bags.
Well, what kind of tea would we put?
Sort of Romulan tea.
The mugs, you could put cold beverages.
We could use it as a front to sell marijuana.
Whoa.
Yeah. Buy some of our tea bags for $60.
I'm not into that.
Marijuana
shit.
Is a racist word.
It is. Cannabis. We'll sell cannabis tea. Cannabis-infused tea from the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Is it a racist word?
Yes.
It is. It is, actually.
Cannabis
is
the word.
Yeah. Marijuana was the word that the government started using in the 30s when they passed
so
the
they
act.
So it made
to,
it sound foreign. And,
yeah, the
and
Tax Act. Oh. Yeah, because they were trying to get, during the Depression, they wanted to have an excuse to arrest Latino people. Workers coming over from Mexico and stuff, so they could have more jobs for the white people, because that's
I used
that's
to
something have, we do.
I used to have that Reefer Madness DVD.
I still have that Reefer Madness DVD where if you smoke one reefer, you start raping people.
Yeah, you're done for.
And then you die in a car accident somehow.
People, you start driving all nuts.
And you start screaming. There's like the Reefer Madness. There's that. First of all, if you watch Reefer Madness, A, you'll see that it's completely ludicrous and doesn't make any sense and has no bearing on actual reality. And three, you'll want to start smoking cannabis because there's one guy who's smoking and he's just sitting in a chair going like, and it looks like a really cool, fun place to chill.
Yeah, they look like they're having a good party.
When did people stop saying reefer?
I don't know. When Reefer Madness came out and everyone was like, this is stupid. This is going to make... It's like all those things when you're growing up in school and anti-drug stuff just really makes you want to do drugs.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, I didn't know this existed. And they're describing this and they're like, oh yeah, this is really terrible. It makes you feel really great. It makes you feel all creative and great. It's terrible. Don't do it. Sit in your desk. Wear your uniform. Stare straight ahead.
Nancy Reagan says don't do it.
So for next week, we've got to discuss another episode or topic next week. One thing I was thinking we could
You've got to pray just to make it today. You've got to pray, pray.
We're very old.
You've got to pray just to make it today.
Now, I was thinking maybe we should do a Voyager. You want to do a Voyager?
I'll do whatever. We could do just all TNG for the rest of the
podcast. I'm sure you'd like that, but we got to bounce around a little bit.
At some point,
I'm cool with a Voyager.
Yeah, at some point, I want to do the one where Worf is like dominating some Jem'Hadar.
Oh yeah, no, we'll do some. There'll be some awesome opportunities for that. But so for Voyager, we got a couple of good options right off the top of my head. One would be Blink of an Eye, which is a season 6 episode. That's the one where the planet goes like evolves really fast.
Sure.
So like time goes forward.
Let's do it.
And there's like an Orville episode that's very similar to
that.
Yeah,
let's do it. I remember that episode. That's a fun. That one's pretty good.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff with that one. I think it'd be worth checking out. We might even, you know, people, if you're able to access it, you might watch that Orville episode. Unfortunately, I'm not remembering the name, but it might be fun to include some comparisons to that.
It sounds like you had a list of episode ideas, or was that just the one?
No, I mean, I just looked up a list of Voyager episodes.
Because that's a good episode.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, we'll do Blink of an Eye, which is Voyager season 6,
what about the one where,
episode 12.
What about the one where B'Elanna gets depressed and goes...
goes to Stovokor?
Goes stratosphere diving, or what was that shit she was doing? She was diving from the stratosphere?
Oh, yeah. Was she, you know what? And that was...
And she turned off the... She did that thing where she turned off the safety protocols on the or whatever, safety measures on the holodeck. She turned off so you could die.
I haven't seen that much.
I don't have a recollection.
Because they could kill you in the holodeck. She got really depressed and she couldn't feel anything because she was so depressed. It was like real depression where she's just like, oh man, I'm not anything. I don't feel anything. And so I'm trying to feel something by going skydiving, except it's all the way from space onto a planet in the holodeck. And I turned off all the safety, freaking the fucking word, but you know what I'm talking about, the things that keep you from dying. So somehow if you dive, go skydiving in the holodeck and the safety are turned off, you can die in the holodeck. Anyways.
Yeah, it seems like something you shouldn't be able to turn off.
Yeah, they did that a couple times in Star Trek.
Frequently. Well, I think, and also the space diving comes from, that's recycling an unused scene from Star Trek Generations, which was originally supposed to open with Captain Kirk space diving and having some trouble or something, but then like getting it sorted out. It's going to be this big, exciting scene. But they didn't end up doing that in the final product. And I've tried to find out, like, I think they definitely filmed some of it. I don't know if they ever, like, actually edited it together or whatever. The best I could find out is they decided it looked stupid, so that's why they decided not to use it. I don't know if that's true or not. Regardless, we'll do the Blink of an Eye, Season 6, Episode 12 from Voyager. We'll talk about that next week.
Extreme Risk. B'Elanna's depression in Extreme Risk is from TrekBBS.com.
All right, so that's an episode we're not going to do next week. So we will, you'll hear from us again next week. Would you like to say anything as we exit the audio airwaves, Dan?
My name is Dan, and I'm here doing a podcast. I'm really cool.
I'm not looking at anybody when I talk.
How about you, Jesse? Any closing thoughts?
I'm just thinking about Worf beating up the Jem'Hadar now and how I really want to see that episode.
You can do that. You can watch it on your own.
No, I know that. I know, but I want to talk about it sometime.
All right. Well, we can talk about it. We can do a bonus episode.
No, we don't have to
just
talk
about it. Just you and I. Let's you and I do a bonus episode.
I'm not saying we have to talk about it next week. I just think we should put it on the list.
I'm just saying.
Should we do another podcast when we finish this one just now and just do it? Start it right back.
We should do a bonus. We'll just do a 15-minute super slam jam. Bonus podcast.
I want to do a real episode about it.
All right. Well, we'll do a real episode about it.
Okay.
Eventually. Maybe the next week.
No, we don't have to do it next week if you don't want to.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. In the meantime, I think that does it for us.
Totally.
Tonight. So I will say a hearty good night to everyone, and we'll be in your ears next week. Have a good one.
Smell you later.
Without warning, Riker falls victim to an unknown hysteria.
Who are you?
And the crew fears he's suffering from a mental breakdown.
The mind can manufacture all kinds of things.
But are they all in the grips of a powerful delusion?
None of it's real. You're still with us on the Enterprise.
Or is Riker slipping into a terrifying madness?
Let me out of here!
Next time on Star Trek: The Next Generation.